Truth of my support is this. I am pro reparations for any people used and abused like blacks have been here and other places. End quote. I believe the government of this country will never do this, but I can have a POTUS who will be open to a federal loan program to help. End quote. Candidate that I think would be most sensitive to the very accomplishable goal and the other things that can, will help black people is Sanders. That's Killer Mike.
There's actually very little in that statement right there that I disagree with. One can be very, very critical of Senator Sanders on this specific issue. One can say Senator Sanders should have more, you know, explicit anti-racist policy within his racial justice platform, not just more general stuff, and still cast a vote for Senator Sanders and still feel that Senator Sanders is the best option that we have in the race. But just because that's who you're going to vote for doesn't mean you then have to agree with everything they say.
Will you be voting for Senator Sanders?
I will be voting for Senator Sanders. I have tried to avoid this question, but yes, I will be voting for Senator Sanders. I try to avoid that because I want to write as a journalist, you know what I mean, and separate that from my role as, I don't know, a private citizen. But I don't think much is accomplished by ducking the question. Yes, I will vote for Senator Sanders. My son influenced me.
And your son is right here, right outside of the studio. Well, I want to thank you, Ta-Nehisi Coates, for joining us. I have a few more questions for you. We'll do a post-show, and we'll post it at democracynow.org. Ta-Nehisi Coates, national correspondent at The Atlantic, writes about culture, politics and social issues. We'll link to his piece in The Atlantic about reparations and wrote the book Between the World and Me. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is now 8:01. Coming up next on The Boo, we have Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland. We'll be talking about politics, gentrification, etc. But first, this underwriting and these announcements.
Help us celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the Confessional Radio Show with Contessa de la Luna. We have performances by Contessa de la Luna herself, Remy Fasolatido, Mike Crenshaw, and many more. We have plenty of audience participation, including human shadow puppet theater, animal impersonation contests, and prizes, prizes, prizes. And don't miss our David Bowie Kazoo tribute. All that and more, Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Tickets are $10 for an entire night of music, mayhem, laughs, and surprises. All proceeds benefit KBOO Community Radio. Tickets available now in advance at brownpapertickets.com or at the door. Join us Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. See you there.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th. 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge in Portland. Holding On to the Sky is an original play about earthquake preparedness, which weaves together stories of disaster, gentrification, health access, addiction, recovery, and resilience. Again, that's Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge, 4834 North Lombard Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
First, you have to have a problem. That part isn't hard. The second step is everybody realizing they're like you. They're holding the same card. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. And that if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change. So quick. Businessmen and congressmen and TV sets all try hard to make sure it isn't so. You don't have a problem, and if you do, it's not the same problem. And if it is, well, there's just nowhere you can go. But it's happened many times. The history is rich, though we easily forget how a meme can take hold and grab you, how it can spread out like a net, and everything can change. So quick. They'll say we are lost or we're dreaming, or they'll make a dream for us. They'll try to come up with a good story about why we belong at the back of the bus, about why we belong in this position, about how we don't know what we meant, about how there most certainly isn't any such thing as the 99%, but everything can change. So quick. Everything can change. So
and good morning out there. This is Cable Community Radio and Wednesday Talk Radio. My name is Paul Roland. Be here with you till 8 o'clock. Number to call in is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And yeah, we're going to be talking about how to change everything. Does this change everything? Must everything change? What does it mean? And all sorts of stuff in between. I just saw the film, This Changes Everything, the film based on Naomi Klein's book last night at the Multnomah Art Center, and I thought I'd talk about it this morning. Got a few announcements. Tonight, out in Hood River, there's a public meeting for the Polali Cooper timber sale, and that is at the Hood River Fire and EMS at 1785 Meyer Parkway out in Hood River, 5 to 7 p.m., along the same lines, BARC, the Portland-based forest watchdog activist group, will host a free workshop on writing substantive and effective official comments to the Forest Service regarding management proposals for Mount Hood National Forest. That's tomorrow at the BARC office from 6 to 8 p.m. at 351 Northeast 18th Avenue here in Portland. BARC works to educate and empower the public to have meaningful interactions with the federal agency that manages the public lands that provide clean water and valuable recreation and education experiences for our communities. The workshop will focus on the newly released environmental assessment for the controversy Polali Cooper timber sale, a 3,000-acre proposal that would impact the Crystal Springs watershed, old-growth forest habitat, and miles of well-loved hiking, biking, and ski trails, all under the guise of, quote, fuels reduction. Staff attorney Brenna Bell will lead this free training, and light snacks will be provided. And you can find out more about BARC's work to protect the forest in Mount Hood at their website, www.bark-out.org. And a bunch of things happening tomorrow. Also, at the Hollywood Theater at 7:30 p.m., the film... Oh, goodness. I didn't get the title of the film. Oh, Sonu. It's about the Mexican maize or corn farmers working to protect their native maize seed in the face of genetically modified contamination and Monsanto, government policy, and other threats to this ancient seed that is a cornerstone of their cultural heritage. Featuring special guest musician Edna Vasquez playing a live music set before the film. Community partners are Biosafety Alliance and the Soil Not Oil Coalition. And That's tomorrow at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. Also tomorrow at 7 p.m., join the Keep Nestle Out of the Gorge Coalition and the Local Water Alliance at a benefit screening of Tapped about bottled water at the Patagonia store in Northwest Portland. That's 907 Northwest Irving Street here in Portland. Attend this benefit screening of Tapped to learn more about the issue of bottled water and to find out what you can do to help protect Oregon's water. The coalition has been working for 7 years to keep a Nestle water bottling plant out of the Columbia River Gorge. With Governor Brown putting a stop to a water rights swap for the proposal, the statewide effort to stop the proposal is gaining steam. Starting this year, with the unprecedented drought conditions, the local community in Hood River County started its fight to keep Nestle and any other corporate water bottlers out of Hood River County with a ballot measure. The Hood River County Water Protection Measure would make exporting any water from the county for water bottling purposes illegal, and it goes to a vote in May of this year. There will be speakers from both groups present to give you the background on these campaigns and let you know what you can do to help them win. More about Keep Nestle Out of the Gorge Coalition, visit www.keepnestleout.wordpress.com. To learn more about the movie, go to www.tappedthemovie.com. And last but not least, tomorrow will be the monthly, generally monthly, KBOO volunteer orientation. If you want to become part of this wonderful experience in DIY community radio and join a exciting group of fellow radio activists, come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue this tomorrow evening, 6 to 8 p.m. That's all tomorrow. Lots going on in town. This Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. at, in other words, at 14 Northeast Killingsworth, join Rojava Solidarity Portland and Rojava Solidarity Seattle for a screening of the documentary Her War, Women vs. ISIS. It will be hosting a discussion afterwards focused on the Women's Protection Unites, Fighting ISIS, the Rojava Revolution, and how we can stand in solidarity with them. Go to facebook.com/Rojava Solidarity Portland. And another event along the same lines in a couple weeks will be Dispatches from Rojava, Saturday, February 20th at Anaris Info Shop at 7101 North Lombard. That's from 8 to 10 p.m. There will be an anarchist author from California who will share their experiences and observations from a recent trip. Yeah, what's going on over there is pretty darn important on a world scale and in terms of fighting the patriarchy and for autonomous social organization. So that's all about Rojava. Also, coming up next week, a week from today, Rethinking Psychiatry presents Bipolarized, an award-winning new film about healing from bipolar disorder. This film follows Ross McKenzie as he embarks on a journey to treat his symptoms through alternative treatments and dig up the root cause of his mental breakdown. That's Wednesday, February 17th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Center for Intercultural Organizing. That's at 700 North Killingsworth Street, also here in Portland. This is a statement of Ross McKenzie, the subject of the film. During my struggle with mental health symptoms and the label of bipolar, I never gave up hope that I would get to the root cause of my symptoms. What became apparent to me in 2010 was that humanity is in a serious crisis and global mental health epidemic. I learned through my 20-year personal healing journey that if one decides to release mental health symptoms, the whole person and all layers of one's health must be addressed. It is my sincere wish moving forward that this film start a new conversation about how we look at and treat individuals experiencing mental health symptoms. And I think that goes for the subject of the show today. If one decides to release mental health symptoms or otherwise symptoms of distress here on planet Earth, the whole person or the whole society, the whole planet, and all layers of one's health must be addressed. So we're going to be talking about that this morning. And I just wanted to read this short article, since I'm kind of on the subject of a bunch of different issues. New research says magic mushrooms actually turn off part of the brain that causes depression. This is from the Higher Perspective website. For thousands of years, humans have consumed psilocybin mushrooms for their psychoactive, quote, tripping effects. Seen primarily as a recreational drug, most people eat them for the euphoria and the visuals. But science is revealing that the humble mushroom is actually useful for more than a good time. Controlled studies have revealed that magic mushrooms can actually treat depression and a host of other psychological issues. The trip is often mind-expanding, consciousness-altering, and actually shuts off the part of the brain responsible for depression. The more these parts of the brain were shut off, the less intensely people reported their changes in perception to be, the researchers wrote in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. One of the parts of the brain that is markedly switched off with psilocybin is the anterior cingulate cortex, which is particularly overactive in people with depression, said David Nutt, professor of neuropsychopharmacology at Imperial College London. Researchers, quote, put electrodes in that part of the brain to switch it off. It would be a lot simpler and safer to use psilocybin instead of electrodes. I am reading from an article I found off the internet. New research says magic mushrooms actually turn off part of the brain that causes depression. Perhaps a bit of ancient wisdom that perhaps is coming back around. So, once again, lots of stuff to talk about. Is that one way to change everything? I don't know. Certainly Timothy Leary thought so back in the 60s. I think he kind of went a little bit off the edge, but anyway, could talk about that too. And another interesting tidbit. Want free trade? Build a West Coast pipeline, says China. Now, this is something that everybody who has been talking about the TPP and all these free trade agreements are concerned about. And it's true. With final arguments in the Kinder Morgan pipeline review underway in Burnaby, a top Chinese official is using the moment to offer Canadians a deal. In his visit to Ottawa last Friday, Han Jun, China's vice minister of financial and economic affairs, said the world's second largest economy would be willing to sign a free trade agreement with Canada, but only if they build a pipeline to the West Coast. Signing an FTA, Han suggested, would give Canadian agriculture and energy producers greater access to China's domestic market. In return, Beijing also wants restrictions lifted on takeovers of Canadian companies by Chinese state-owned enterprises. China has been working to gain access to Canadian oil reserves for more than a decade. As Enbridge's first partner on Northern Gateway in 2005, state-owned PetroChina pledged to purchase up to half of the pipeline's capacity, but became frustrated by delays and eventually pulled out of the project. And of course, many of those delays are due to activists like you and me filing lawsuits, writing appeals and letters, blocking projects by like the Unistoten camp up in upper British Columbia, actually building buildings and having a permanent camp on pipeline rights of ways, doing immediate direct action civil disobedience, like in the case of Burnaby Mountain. And of course, like people have been doing in Seattle, Portland, and all over the place, including most recently yesterday, breaking up a eminent domain hearing over in Maine to stop a fracking pipe, eminent domain seizure of land for a fracking gas pipeline. So that's an article I pulled off the net called "Want Free Trade? Build a West Coast Pipeline," says China.
Yeah, when in doubt, light the planet on fire. That will start something.
Yeah, let's light some fires underneath ourselves, first of all, because that's where it all starts. So, yeah, I saw the film finally, This Changes Everything, last night at Multnomah Arts Center up in Southwest Portland. And I thought, some really fascinating stuff in that. I thought just quick trip around the world of these amazing citizens' movements, stopping a gold mine in Greece. Of course, the indigenous people uprising in British Columbia and in Alberta against the tar sands and against pipelines. But what was really interesting was a glimpse into what's going on in China, the incredible, really rapid development that has gone on and the tensions. That's one thing I think we don't really get as from afar is the real powerful contradictions and tensions in everywhere between these forces that continue to build these massive amounts of infrastructure and development to continue this mad fossil fuel-based race to Armageddon, and the strong opposition everywhere that's going on. And in China, there's some really powerful citizens' movements. It just showed footage after footage of local direct actions and protests against a lot of it's just against the pollution because it's just incredibly terrible, terrifying there to see these images of people. Basically, you almost can't see your, 100 feet in front of you because of the smog, and people are expected to go about their daily lives living that. But of course, it's a global system, and they're pumping out these massive amounts of commodities since they joined the race to capitalist heaven a couple decades ago in China. And of course, Walmart built their corporate model selling these cheap commodities and depressing wages. So, as I said, it's all connected. And how do we step in to the stream and make an effect? Number to call is 503-231-8187. Anybody else out there see This Changes Everything, the film, or read the book, or is thinking about these things on this Wednesday morning here in Portland? Give me a call. There's also an article I picked up on the net called How to Change Everything. Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything is a vital book whose limitations should spark discussion about where we go from here by Elisa Battistoni, which was part of a Jacobin symposium on Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything. What does it mean to change the world? The left has long proclaimed the need to, quote, change everything, to foment revolution rather than advance reform, to replace the dismal existing state of affairs with a better, more rational order. And yet, in the meantime, capitalism itself is already changing everything faster than we can keep up, constantly rooting out new resources, implementing new modes of production, shuddering through crisis after crisis. Such a mercurial, unstable order seemed to Marx doomed to ultimately destroy itself. And yet capitalism has managed to survive even as it constantly remakes the world around it. Now, though, Naomi Klein argues that capitalism has finally gone too far. Globalization was bad enough, but global warming is even worse. Capitalism is now changing the world very literally, altering the planet's climate and threatening to destroy the prospect of a livable future on Earth. As the climate changes, everything else is going to change whether we like it or not. Thus, the duty to change the world deliberately is more urgent than ever before. But what exactly needs to change? At first glance, it would appear that it's either capitalism or the climate. After all, capitalism versus the climate is literally blazoned across the back cover of the book. Yet much of the debate about the book on the left has revolved around the question of whether Klein is taking on capitalism itself or just its most conspicuously destructive tendencies, softening the blow with qualifications, unfettered capitalism, unregulated capitalism, and so on. It's true that the subtitle is the only place where capitalism appears without a modifier, but Klein's hesitancy to name the system outright isn't simply political hedging. When she declares that our economy is at war with many forms of life on Earth, including human life, she has two systems in mind. Capitalism is one, what she calls extractivism is the other. Capitalism for Klein isn't fundamentally about wage labor or who owns the means of the production or commodification or markets, though each of these features sporadically appear in her account. Instead, she defines capitalism first and foremost by growth, endless, churning, productive, destructive growth in pursuit of profit. Growth, as it turns out, is the feature most consistently emphasized by many scholars currently working in the history of capitalism, though this is more a sign of contemporary unease around growth than an indication that this definition is the most illuminating. In any case, Klein's argument essentially amounts to the now familiar line that you can't have infinite growth on a finite planet. Extractivism, meanwhile, is a philosophy of rapacious industrialism resting on the Enlightenment belief that humans can and should triumph over and control nature, rationally organize society, and achieve progress through liberation from the constraints of the natural world. And I break into reading from this article called How to Change Everything. That was pretty much the major focus of the film, This Changes Everything, which was actually directed by her partner. I can't remember his name at present. But yeah, she talks about the emphasis on 400 years of this Enlightenment belief in dominating the natural world and being able to control the natural world, and how it's time to call that into question. In Klein's account, this intellectual shift is loosely linked to the material rise of capitalism, which demands that coal be burned to fuel the satanic mills. But it's not exclusively capitalistic. Klein also has harsh words for what she calls the extractivist left, castigating countries like Venezuela and Brazil that have sought to reduce poverty by drilling for oil and leveling rainforests. And I'm going to break into that because we do have a caller. Go ahead. You're on the air. Tom, hello.
Hello. Paul, we spoke before. I guess I wanted to start off on a sort of lofty idea about capitalism and how it seems to have a stranglehold on us. The stranglehold that it actually has is one that we're volunteering for. It's in the Tao Te Ching and in Buddhist philosophy. If needs are honestly defined, they're met in the natural order of the universe. And the only way this can be sublimated is by a few getting hold of the resources and strangleholding them and starving us out, and then teaching us to redefine our needs based on what they want to sell us. So I think that a soul search as to what we actually need to survive in this society and be healthy and help each other is by actually indicting ourselves into a position where we see our needs and understand them honestly and be happy with those, because they are so easily met. And I think this gluttony would slowly go away, and we would take the power away from the corporations and the capitalists and all the people who are trying to control the mass.
Uh-huh.
That the burden is upon us as much as it is upon them to stop their activities.
Yeah, well, there's these various kind of sort of oppositional, different modes of looking at these things. And you express, I believe, one, which is that sort of we need to get in touch with our own deepest self and sort of withdraw from the sort of dominant way of whatever you call it, mode of operating, and that it will slowly wither away. That's one. I think it's not the only one, and I think it's not necessarily in contradiction with sort of maybe a systemic analysis of that this is a systemic problem, structural problem that we need to also approach structurally. I don't think those are necessarily in opposition to each other.
No, I do not believe so at all. But I think that when it all comes down to it, while we may band together and affect change in our society, it requires, it always requires that even the people that band together you know, look at themselves and embody the very idea that they're suggesting everybody else attach themselves to. And I think that requires a beginning with oneself and then moving out and being able to be an example, so to redefine their needs in a way that is compatible with the rest of this planet.
So I want to talk about that a little more, because it's something I've talked about this in various ways, you know, on this show. And I think one thing that we need to maybe think about is methods of doing that. You know, people, you know, obviously yoga is like a big thing that people do in Portland. And that's one way of sort of getting in touch with one's bodily reality. Meditation is another way. I personally think that maybe we need even more dramatic ways to, you know, I mentioned, of course, without pronouncing my personal opinions on the subject, because, you know, psilocybin is an illegal substance. But people throughout the ages have pointed at psychedelic substances as being a way to break from sort of the veil of illusion, sort of get into a deeper connection to reality. That's an interesting idea. One thing that I've thought about, or one thing that I've practiced myself a little bit and read about, is another modality called holotropic breathwork. There's many, many different modalities out there, different kinds of body work, different kinds of breath work, as a way of sort of getting deeply in touch with one's cellular organic reality. But it was developed by Stanislav Grof, who actually was one of the early psychedelic researchers, and he got into this other non, you know, not using actual substances. And so it's a way of, you know, sort of breaking the conditioning that we have, because our bodies are sort of locked in these rigid patterns. You know, we tend to breathe very shallow, in a very shallow way. We tend to sort of get on this sort of autopilot, the sort of automatic, you know, way. I don't know if you've heard about that at all.
No, but I have indulged in a few mushrooms myself, and I will say that when I was a younger man, that it certainly did open the doors to the way I think now. And I spent a lot of time now questioning, you know, allowing the paradigm to affect me. And I often will walk into a store and I will look around and I see all this stuff. And, like, you know, I understand that I didn't need this yesterday, so therefore I probably won't need it tomorrow. And I sort of apply that thinking to everything I might consume. And as I have done so over the past probably 5 or 6 years, fairly rigidly, I have found that this comes at me from every direction. Every time I question something that someone's trying to sell me, or whatever, some service, every time I give that analysis, I find that, no, I don't need things. And I think that once you get that answer enough times in your face, when you ask the question honestly, it starts to set in. And the only way you can do that is to, as you said, know yourself deeply, know yourself at a cellular level, a biological level, and get down to the sort of the primal aspect of yourself. And then see how it's been built up from there, and you'll see that it's all lies, and you start to feel it all. And it's just been my experience. I do study a lot of Eastern philosophy, and you know, piety is a much misunderstood concept because people have tried to make it complicated.
Okay. Well, Tom,
this is sort of what I'm hearkening to.
Well, I really appreciate this conversation, and I personally would like to continue for quite a bit longer, as I often would with the guests who call in, but we have another couple callers who've called in the meantime.
Excellent.
So I appreciate your calling in.
And hey, Paul, your invitation to the basement pub still stands.
All right. Thank you very much. I had forgotten all about that, but I will try to remember that. So we've got another caller. This is taking an interesting direction. This is actually something that I have wanted to get a little deeper into. This, you know, the idea of changing everything, you know, from the large scale to the individual scale, and you know, taking it to a little a different level of like, what does it actually mean to really change ourselves? Are we really taking that challenge to heart? And also, can we do it by ourselves either is another question. Let's go to our next caller. Mark, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. To me, changing our economic models is really vital. Seeing the San Francisco condominium model as really discredited and not praising it to the sky, and accepting a new model like Vancouver, BC community centers. They have 26 community centers, some with swimming pools that take your breath away. You can see them on the internet, and it makes all the difference. It enables employed and unemployed people to feel valued and included. It, in some ways, it's like a third way beyond the state and the market. It's a very exciting possibility. I'm amazed at how the city council here in Portland can become so ecstatic about hotel building and really ignore or decry affordable housing and rehabilitating dilapidated hotels like the Joyce, the Grove, and the West Wind. Now, I think for ecological and for democratic reasons, rehabilitating these hotels is very, very sensible. And there are, of course, impoverished and mentally challenged people who really need the Joyce, the Grove, and the West Wind. It's just a case of incompetence and how the city council, maybe they're paid too much, but they're just caught in this path dependency, kind of serving only the developers.
Well, you know, the main lesson of that film I saw last night, This Changes Everything, based on the book by Naomi Klein, was like she was talking about, you know, people all point to Germany as this model for alternative energy development. And of course, she points out that there's great, great contradictions still, that it's, you know, still largely going on the growth model. But the main reason why there was this push towards alternative energies was from the citizens themselves, people actually getting back the power over the utilities in their own towns and whatever municipalities, and going that way towards developing. So if we want these community centers that you're talking about, if we want to get away, I just don't see any way, because other than citizens themselves. I mean, you know, I talked about this Anaris Info Shop up on North Lombard as one small community center. You know, we had, there's just very few, you know, places that are actually run by people themselves. You know, the community centers as they exist. I was just at the East Portland Community Center to swim yesterday. Wonderful, wonderful place where there's people doing Zumba, people swimming, there's people, you know, lifting weights, there's various classes, there's opportunities for children, for seniors, and, you know, there are community centers all around the city that are, you know, run are public institutions, government institutions, but are serving the needs of citizens. And we need to, you know, make use of those and do things in them, you know, do our own programs, you know, even, you know, political stuff, push the boundaries, organize events at those, and, you know, churches or another place where people are, you know, since the congregations are shrinking everywhere, a lot of the churches are sort of repurposing themselves to serving the community. Tabor Space up on 48th, I believe, in Southeast Belmont is a place that has a cafe now. I think we just need to think creatively about the spaces and the opportunities that we do have in the city and make use of them.
And also demand countermeasures to the neoliberal rollback, countermeasures to all the different ways in which the powerful, the economically powerful, have been enriched, And community centers, of course, is a very vital countermeasure so that we become more democracy and not a plutocracy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not just we become a participating democracy, not a spectator democracy.
Indeed, indeed.
Yes.
And, you know, the signs, you know, perhaps the Bernie Sanders candidacy, I don't know. There's
Absolutely.
A lot of people are feeling excitement about that.
Absolutely, yes. It's so refreshing that there is an authentic, principled person, not a cardboard, plastic person ready to run to anything that seems popular.
But of course, I can't talk
yes.
too much about electoral politics here on KBOO.
Yes.
My guests can, but I was hoping not to get too much into that. But thank you so much for calling. That's a very refreshing perspective, the need to reclaim public space. Of course, the Occupy movement and other such movements were definitely a big part of the spirit of reclaiming our public space. We have someone who apparently wants to talk about psilocybin. Let's see. Go ahead. You're on the air. Mark.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Good.
I want to say it's like when you bring up psilocybin and the backdrop of what's going on, it helps me understand why things like this that's been like through the millennia, you know, amongst the human experience, all of a sudden made illegal. And I like to bring up what John Hancock said about these substances and how our government has, like, declared a war on consciousness, and how that there's some very smart people out there who understand that the human mind, the human psyche is amazing. It's capable of some incredible things. And our Earth gave us everything to get there, to achieve this amazing state. And they are aware of this. So, I mean, it's like when you, like, declare war on consciousness, what you're doing is really encouraging a type of devolving or devolution of the human mind and the human psyche to where you basically have a bunch of clothed, domesticated apes, you know? And, I mean, if we could, like, continue to feed all of our base impulses, it'll really help condition the mind into where we'll become impulsive-like, animal-like people, giving them...
Well, I don't know about this, you know, diminishing other animals. I don't think it's necessary to... I don't know. All animal life is actually pretty incredibly wonderful, and many animals have consciousness as well. I'm not sure that's the best way to make your point.
Paul, I'm so in agreement with. I don't have any. I love apes. They all animals tend to understand to have a natural equilibrium with the planet. Okay, humans, we are in the ape. We you know, there's only like a 2% difference between us and chimps. True. And it seems as though the power to be, as a result of their world consciousness, is trying to reduce us, is trying to destroy that.
No, I think that's a wonderful point. I think the idea that the people who are in, you know, at the summit of these vast systems of power and control, you know, may be imposing their own limited and restricted consciousness on the rest of it. And, you know, I think that's a really wonderful point. I think a lot about, like, the need for transcendence, which was expressed in, you know, so-called primitive societies through trance states, through ecstatic dance and drumming, and perhaps, you know, these substances as well. And it's sort of the transcendence has sort of been substituted with this vertical, you know, transcendence through accumulation of technological prowess, you know, transcendence through going faster, farther, through, you know, being able to build up these towering buildings, you know, up towards the sky, like the Tower of Babel. I think there's something very profound in that. We've substituted sort of an interior transcendence with this sort of very mechanistic exterior sort of pseudo transcendence.
Well, I remember reading an article years ago concerning psilocybin and how it's very possible that our ancestors started to grow our cerebrum as a result of this particular substance. And it was our diet and our access to these type of now illegal substances that actually was partly responsible for the type of brains that we have today. So, I mean, let's just make anything that expands consciousness and inner intelligence, as well as outer intelligence, let's make it illegal, stifle the human species. Just stifle them.
All right.
And that's it.
Okay, we got another couple callers, and that's you're bringing up some really interesting points. As I will say, as I said previously, I would like to continue to talk to you for at great length, but we've only got 15 minutes left on the show. This show has taken an interesting turn. I'm just going to run with it. We apparently have someone who is in disagreement with some things that have been said, so let's go and hear that caller. Norm, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Paul. As always, I love your show. I would caution anyone, especially somebody very young, against what friends of mine have called the lazy way to enlightenment. You know, popping something in your mouth and expecting everything to be changed. It's really attractive, and I understand, and, you know, I'll admit, you know, I did it when I was younger. And what I think does work better, fasting and meditation and purposefully depriving my body for extended periods of time, and attempting to look inside myself with only me, you know, because really that's all I got. Mm-hmm. And you know, I get it, how attractive taking a drug can be.
Well, you know, yes, I mean, I don't think these are necessarily, again, in strict opposition, one or the other. Obviously, you know, they talked about set and setting, you know, the context within which, and obviously, yes, and the fact that things are illegal is obviously something that we have to be certainly careful about how I talk about them on the air. And also, there are sometimes legitimate reasons. There are some things that obviously people shouldn't be putting in their consuming at all. They're extremely dangerous. But I think the last caller brought up some really interesting points about perhaps some of the psychological reasons why there is suppression of some of these substances, that perhaps they have actually had some utility, and perhaps, as some people have suggested, that they actually have had a role in the development of us as a species. These are, you know, very difficult and complex and controversial subjects. But
yeah, they're controversial, all right.
Anyway, so but your point, I think, is that, you know, we don't necessarily need them to perhaps get to the same place as people who advocate taking such substances they can get to the same place through, as you said, you know, as I said earlier, I referred to holotropic breathwork as one modality that one of the pioneer psychedelic researchers, Stanislav Grof himself, got into, as he himself saw the way that rampant and undisciplined and dangerous psychedelic use exploded in the 60s and 70s. He decided to go in a different direction.
Can you spell his name?
G-R-O-F, Grof, uh-huh. I believe, Stanislav Grof.
Okay.
And I think his partner, she is also involved, and I can't remember her name. And there's people who followed on their work, and there's people who still do these different modalities. And they're not the only ones. You know, it's very similar to rebirthing, breathing, various modes of controlling. It's a sort of controlled hyperventilation as a way of sort of breaking through sort of these rigid patterns of a kind of superficial self-control kind of mechanization of our own bodies.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you have any last thoughts, we got a couple other callers.
I don't disagree with the therapeutic use of certain drugs in a therapeutic setting.
Okay.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Thank you for calling. And that's actually was the original source of this tangent that has sort of become sort of the conversation here. New research says magic mushrooms actually turn off part of the brain that causes depression. But of course, you know, there are, you know, the causes of depression socially is something that we really need to look at, perhaps even before any kind of, sort of a substance attempt to correct it. The causes of depression are deeply, deeply social, and the individual psyche is embedded in a cultural social setting that is very, very dismal and very frankly depressing. And so depression is obviously is an evolutionarily, is part of our makeup. And so it has a reason for existing, and it is a reaction to things that happen to us. In fact, it is, I saw something recently where it is trauma. A really wonderful woman talking about actually hearing voices and, quote, so-called schizophrenia as basically a reaction to trauma and to things that happen to people, not just this sort of psychochemical imbalance. So anyway, I did mention Rethinking Psychiatry earlier. A week from today is the film Bipolarized. That's talking about a lot of these issues. That's Wednesday, February 17, 7 to 9 p.m. That's a good group to get involved in. There's also the Icarus group that is met in various incarnations in Portland. You might check them out. But we have another caller. Go ahead. Yeah. You're on the air. Mark.
Yeah. I hate to change the subject.
Go ahead.
Oh, let me. I wondered what other people had to say about the rules that have just come out from the city council yesterday.
On what?
About the camping.
Oh, anywhere, yeah, that was...
Anywhere you want, sort of camping, or it's a very... I'm not sure what the rule is. And the other rule, something to do with closing down some of the food carts?
Mm-hmm.
I heard something like that, and I thought, gee, that's one of the things I like about downtown.
Well, yeah, I think it's for development.
Without that being there, too.
Well, it's closing down that space to build high-rise buildings. Well, yeah, I mean, the pressure on real estate prices are skyrocketing. This is a boom town. Portland is just, and you know, what do we do about it? It's just so massive.
That new tower.
So I'm going to ask my engineer Ross to play the second song at the end of the program that we had lined up. I don't know if people have heard this song, Fred and Carrie. about our iconic program, Portlandia. But we're going to play that at the end of the program. But yeah, the food carts is an issue of the closing off of a form of public space. Obviously, it's for capitalist enterprises.
Right. And of course, the restaurants never liked it.
Uh-huh.
The ones that were already bedded in, with buildings.
Right. So more and more enclosed, high-level built environment here in Portland. It's been going on kind of unchecked for two decades. I don't know how to stop it.
Yeah.
But the camping thing, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, they're truly struggling. I think these are mayor and city council people are not heartless people. I mean, it's probably more of a management problem for them, I suspect. It's you don't want to have massive amounts of people just sort of camping all over the place and making a mess for the good citizens that are all moving here with money from other places.
Uh-huh.
But I think they're truly struggling with something. I think they're not heartless people, and I think it's a difficult issue.
Really, it is. Huge.
But we got another caller, and
I want other people's opinions on that very subject.
Well, thank you so much
for
calling. Everybody always calls at the last minute here. Let's go to our next caller. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, I just had a question for you. I'm a recent listener, but I like where this show is headed. But I had a question for you on free markets and getting back to your discussion about Naomi Klein.
Mm-hmm.
What's with the antipathy towards free markets and the creation of abundance in a system of capitalism is one thing, but then us as humans not wanting or saying, hey, we have the abundance, but I choose not to have it. And I look at it from a free market perspective and saying it has created opportunity and wealth, but we as individuals need to say, I choose not to have that. I don't know if that's just kind of your thoughts on what other form of government, I guess not even government, but market could provide what we have as individuals.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, there's abundance and abundance. I mean, this earth, is originally produces an incredible abundance. I'm not sure why, we needed to get off on this track of channeling and controlling and manipulating the natural abundance to create these massive surpluses.
Yeah.
That's a deep problem. So I'm not sure this creation of abundance. I think this creation of artificial abundance, I think it's an abundance. It's an abhorrent abundance to me. It's an abundance that is against the natural abundance of what the earth provides personally.
Yeah, no, and that's fair, and I agree with you. I think it's that, for me, I look at it from the perspective of free markets have provided, but it's on us as the individuals and the consumers of that to say, look, I've got enough. Thank you. This has been provided for me. But one of your previous callers said, I didn't need this yesterday. I probably don't need it tomorrow.
Well, I think it's a systemic thing. I think it's the markets, well, actually, I just got told that we've got to wrap up here. So this is a subject we're not going to get much further on. I think Ross wants to give us some information on mushrooms.
Yeah, well, there's a good website you can refer to, E-R-O-W-I-D, Arrowid. Is a great place to learn more about all of the substances that alter consciousness, including pharmaceuticals and the ones occurring naturally. Plus, the KABU website has a terrific episode from 2011 on the radio zine with James Fadiman on the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. So there's something on the KABU website people can refer to based on this, and then Arrowid, E-R-O-W-I-D, is a clearinghouse of information on mind-altering substances.
Well, thank you for that, Ross. And on that note, I would like to also say that I went to an amazing presentation the other night of a book called Radical Mycology. And of course, magic mushrooms is just a small part of that book, actually, because mushrooms is is a vast subject, but it's an amazing book just published by Peter. Gosh, I got his name wrong, but I'm going to have him on Kabu here in not too long, I hope. And check that out, Radical Mycology. So we got to go. Thank you so much for listening. It's been an interesting program as always. My name is Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland.
Like, what are you doing up there?
I'm totally moving here.
That's so exciting.
And it's so cheap.
It's so funky.
It's so cute.
And everyone has beards.
It's just like that show, Portlandia.
Fred and Carrie, Fred and Carrie. We don't think that you're funny.
A proud co-sponsor of the Portland Youth Summit, taking place February 12th and February 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club in Portland. February 12th will feature a workshop called Healing Ourselves to Raise Our Future and a performance by spoken word artist S. Renee Mitchell. February 13th will feature workshops on topics ranging from becoming an MC to healthy living to information on going to Africa. That evening, the summit will close with a youth talent showcase. Again, that's the Portland Youth Summit, February 12th and 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club, 5250 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 a.m. Today on Political Perspectives, we hear excerpts from a panel discussion called Report Back from COP21, Paris Climate Talks. It was recorded on January 20th